Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Waffles, chocolates, beer, and diamonds are some of the products commonly identified with Belgium. But this country, roughly the size of Pahang, is among the top 10 largest economies in the European Union, as well as among the top 25 in the world. How can we better leverage cooperation between our two countries at a time of complex geopolitical and economic developments? Joining me to discuss some of these themes is His Excellency Peter Van Ecker, Ambassador of Belgium to Malaysia. Ambassador, good morning and welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Good morning, and thanks for having me here.
I think I'd like to start with perhaps a big picture look at Europe and the European Union. Now, Brussels is the headquarters of two major European organizations, the EU as well as NATO, and it's really seen as the epicenter of so much of the intergovernment political activity in the region. To the outsider, like myself, it seems that Belgium identity is often subsumed with that of the EU or even overshadowed by some of the more prominent European countries. In that sense, how does Belgium see itself in the EU landscape?
Well, first of all, we are one of the founders of the EU, and we started off with six, and Belgium was one of them. Now, I do think that there is a reason why the core institutions of the European Union are in Belgium. When these six, they had to decide where the European Parliament and where the European Council had to be located, they decided on Brussels. And that is for a particular reason. You can probably not imagine that a bigger country like France would allow that a company like Germany would have the bigger institutions. So they settled on a smaller country. And there you already see that being small can sometimes be an advantage. And I think that is one of the main reasons that these core institutions now are located in Brussels.
Right. Yeah. So small was seen as unthreatening. Hence, Brussels became the center point for European politics,
essentially. Absolutely. And I think we benefit from that. At this moment, I think about 5,000 diplomats are located in Brussels. Of course, they are not all there for the European Union. Some are also attached to the other international organizations, like you mentioned, the NATO. But we have all these diplomats and then all the people coming with that, like the NGOs and the think tanks. So Belgium has hugely benefited from that. You can also see why Belgium being small is an advantage. The first president of the council was Herman Van Rompuy. He was a Belgian. The second was a Polish, but the third is a Belgian. That is currently Charles Michel, and he was our former prime minister. So again, you see that it's easy for the bigger countries to settle on a smaller country or on a person from a smaller country to lead the institution.
Interesting. Yeah. So Brussels as that mediator between all these other bigger competing powers in some sort.
Absolutely. And attached to that is, of course, that Belgium in itself can be seen as a kind of mini-Europe. We have different communities. We have a French-speaking community, we have a Dutch-speaking community, and in the eastern part you have a German-speaking community. All these three communities, they have to keep Belgium going. For that, you have to make compromises. For that, you have to develop a kind of intricate governance system. And that is what Belgium has done, and that is what Belgium is famous for. And people are looking upon that.
It is very intricate indeed. It's very complex. And we'll touch on that a little bit later in the conversation. I would want to just focus back to the EU, where Belgium is actually going to be taking on the presidency of the European Council.
Yes.
For 6 months beginning January 2024. At this stage, are there any particular priorities that Belgium will be working towards during this presidency or issues that the country hopes to platform?
Yeah. Now, well, first of all, the diplomatic days are coming up. These are scheduled now for the beginning of November. All ambassadors will be called to Brussels, and there, of course, they will inform on the priorities that Belgium wants to bring to the table during its presidency. Mm. Of course, one of the discussions which will take place, that is on the enlargement. It has been in the news now, especially after the president of the council made a speech end of August on saying that the enlargement should be done by 2030. Immediate reaction from the commission that we should not fix on a date, but we should fix on the criteria, whether they are whether they have fulfilled the criteria to exceed, etc. Fine. So that will come to the table, and that will probably come on the agenda of the Belgian presidency. How the discussions are going to be, that is very difficult to predict now. But what we do know, of course, is that if you talk about enlargement, you are going to talk about the decision-making process within the European Union. Is unanimity still feasible? We do not know that. That is, of course, up to the leaders of the summit to discuss that. Are we going to move more to qualified votes for certain areas, yes or no? These are discussions which are going to be on the table. But also, there are going to be discussions on, I suspect, on the organizational structure. Now, every country sends one commissioner to the commission. If we are going to enlarge, and there are now 8 candidates for the moment in the waiting list, so then we become 35. Are we going to have 35 policy areas? There's going to be discussion on that. And then financial implications, of course, because if you enlarge, some of the countries which will be coming in will be poorer, meaning some of the net contributors might be become net contributors
might carry more weight.
Some of the net receivers may become net contributors. So that is all. All these things will need to be discussed. The decision-making process, the financial implications, and all the organizational implications. But what it is going to be, well, that is very difficult now to predict. But that enlargement in the end will happen, and that is practically possibly a necessity.
I mean, I think the questions of enlargement also are very much related to what's happening in Ukraine at the moment. And I think there's been a lot of attention from outsiders, at least, on whether Ukraine is going to be among those that will be accelerated to join the union. Does Belgium have a position on this at this stage? You just painted the complexities in enlarging the membership. But as far as Ukraine is concerned, does Belgium lean one way or the other at this point?
I think Belgium leans more towards enlargement, but not necessarily Ukraine. But of course, it will have to look also on the criteria fulfilled. Because for Ukraine, they had about 7 criteria put forward. And I think up to now, there are only 2 which they have fulfilled. That is with respect to media legislation and the other one on justice reform. But the other ones are on anti-money laundering. They are on anti-corruption, on reducing the influence of the oligarchs. We see that Ukraine is working on them. We see that, and I think that will take to that will be taken into account. But that being said, there are also 5 countries in the Balkan who have been waiting for a long time. You can't keep them, so to say, in the fridge for a long time. So you have to make a decision at a certain point. And therefore, I think it is very good that the President of Council has put that date forward, even though the Commission says that the criteria should be fulfilled. In the end, it will be a political decision. And that political decision that will be taken probably irrespective of all the criteria have fulfilled, then they will make a political decision, also because of geostrategic motives.
Sticking to the war on Ukraine, the EU has remained steadfast behind Ukraine as the conflict continues. But given that there isn't a clear end in sight, how are the dynamics in terms of measures to provide weapons and ammunition to Kyiv? What is that debate or discussion going like within the EU and perhaps also within Belgium itself?
Well, Well, there are. Well, let me first let me speak about Belgium, because I think for EU, my colleagues of the EU delegation are better fit to speak about that. But let me speak about Belgium. And I think when it comes to Ukraine, we have two kinds of support. First, we have the principal support, and that you have seen, we have voted for all the resolutions in the United Nations. Clearly a breach of the charter, it's aggression, it's an annexation of provinces which shouldn't, it's not upholding the charter, etc. Malaysia, for example, have also voted in favor for these same kind of things. It's only for two of them that they have abstained. Fine. Now, apart from that, from the principal support, we also have the financial support. Belgium, and it keeps track, even on the list of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, of all the support we are giving. It's about 430 billion euros that we have given so far. 300 is military support, but it's not all lethal. Some of this is like generators, etc., and then the uniforms for the winter, etc. 300 for military support, 100 about for humanitarian support, because this is a humanitarian crisis. You have natural crisis, but this is a man-made crisis, and therefore we have to give to make sure that people are not longer suffering. Mm. And then we have given some small support, I think, legal assistance, and then some, well, reconstruction at this phase. But of course, since the war is not over, this is a little bit difficult kind of support to upscale at this moment. Fine. I think that we support the EU, and now they have already agreed on an additional package. And that is about, if I remember correctly, it's about 500 billion that they want to give between 2024 and 2027. These are decisions taken within the EU, and Belgium stands firmly behind this decision.
You mentioned 2027, Ambassador. The EU not seeing any resolution all the way up till then? Is a resolution to this going to be on the battlefield, essentially, rather than at the negotiation table?
Well, I cannot. That's too difficult for me to say. Yeah. Sorry, I cannot give a clear answer on that one. Yeah.
I'm speaking to His Excellency Peter van Ecker, Ambassador of Belgium to Malaysia. When we come back, we'll delve into the economic situation between our two countries and what we can leverage. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile. 5G makes business sense.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and with me on the show today is His Excellency Peter van Ecker, Ambassador of Belgium to Malaysia. Now, earlier we were looking at some of the issues that the EU face and how Belgium sees itself in the broader EU landscape. I would like to zoom in onto our bilateral relations. As it stands, Malaysia-Belgium trade, I believe, stands at about $1 billion in terms of exports from both sides. And this is fairly tiny, considering that when you look at Malaysia EU trades, I think that's about $48 billion. But maybe, Ambassador, you could contextualize for me what this trade relation consists of. What are the strengths that you see, and where are the opportunities that we should be focusing on to grow?
Yeah. Well, the 1 billion that you are mentioning, this is a trade deficit in your favor. So you are exporting more to Belgium than that Belgium is exporting to Malaysia. Now, if you look at the details, what is being exported to both countries, when I look at Belgium's side, first and foremost, we are exporting vaccines. I don't know if you are aware about, but every year between 400 and 500,000 babies are born in Malaysia. They are all vaccinated by vaccines produced in Belgium. And this is not specifically by Belgian companies, but by companies who have based their production and their research site in Belgium, because Belgium is famous for its life sciences. So it's vaccines. And then, not surprisingly, also medicaments, packaged medicaments, because all these companies are there, of course, and they export that as well. I was a little bit wondering that we are also exporting integrated circuits when I looked that up, because Malaysia is also exporting integrated circuits to Belgium. So there is a kind of exchange of integrated circuits. But then we are also exporting fertilizers. So that already covers quite a bulk of what we are doing towards Malaysia. Mm. When I look at what Malaysia is exporting, that's also quite in the medical field. These are orthopedic appliances. This is like splints and truces and all these kind of things that we use also in our health facilities, but also hearing aids. I think these are not raw materials. These are already quite sophisticated materials. They are, and then, of course, the integrated circuits and palm oil. You're, of course, exporting palm oil to Belgium. But having said that, we always tend to focus on trade. But I always say you need good trade relations to have investments in each country. Fine. And there I'm rather optimistic of what I have seen that Belgium is doing in Malaysia, because we have a number of companies here. What I came to realize is that Belgium is strong like in niche markets. And I have given you the example of the vaccines, but also what you probably won't realize is that 7 out of 10 eggs that you eat here in Malaysia comes out of an incubator from a company which is called Peter Siemens. And they have the world market on this kind of machinery. These are incubators. It's not known. It's not a brand that everyone knows, but yet they dominate within that field. And I have a little bit of feeling that Belgian companies are like that. Mm. We have another company which is called Loast, which has also invested in Perak. And they are mining. They have a quarry for lime and limestone. But they are a world player for lime and limestone. And lime and limestone, that is something you will encounter every day. The fact that your paper is white, that is because of the limestone which is added to it. Mm. So we are there, but you don't know. You don't know. There is a part of Belgium in that newspaper that you are reading. So of course, apart from that, what I've seen is in Malaysia, when I look at typically the people that are being employed, it goes from factory workers to really high-skilled engineers, mainly software engineers. Mm-hmm. And we have here two companies which employ a quite substantial number of software engineers. We have, for example, Swift. You know Swift for the financial transactions. Mm-hmm. They are behind the fact that through their messaging system you can transfer money from one country to another. They have 600 people here employed in Kuala Lumpur. These are software engineers.
Okay, so there is considerable technology transfer in a way between Belgium and Malaysia in these niche areas that we don't pay much attention to. And what would it take for us to ramp up those types of investments? You know, when you speak to the Belgian business community, what is it that they're looking for when they look at the ASEAN region overall in terms of where they want to put their base, or in terms of where they see a future potential investment destinations? What is it that makes countries attractive? And does anything about Malaysia stand out, or are we behind?
I see similarities between Malaysia and Belgium on that front. First of all is the geographical location. You are here at the Strait of Malacca. This is one, in terms of ships passing through, probably the busiest route in the world. Fine. We are, as Belgium, at the heart of Europe. We have a considerable hinterland. We have two ports. and then serving all these countries like Germany and all the Eastern countries. Fine. You have that kind of same position. You have Port Klang here. You have the port in Georgetown, in Penang, and then you have the port in Johor. So you have that advantage. Right? So you have a strategic geographic location. That is already one thing. You have skilled labor force, thanks to the universities that you're having. You have a lot of universities, and I see Malaysia is really an education hub. It's attracting a lot of students from going to Africa, but also from Asia, more from Asia probably than from Africa. But you attract a lot of students, and that is a kind of recognition for the quality of your education system. Mm. We in Belgium, we also have a very good education system. We have two of our universities are in the top 100. It's University of Leuven and it's University of Ghent. So you have that similarity as well. Multilingual. Belgium, I've already explained, we speak French, we speak Dutch. Some of them speak German as well. Of course, everyone speaks English. You here, you have in Malaysia, you speak Bahasa. Some of them speak Mandarin, Cantonese, others speak Tamil. Those who master all these languages with on top English gives you an advantage. And that is which you should try to preserve and stress that you have that multilingual asset and continue investing into that. And then I think, well, if I go for Belgium, I think you need... in a way, stable governance and rule of law during a prolonged time. And all these things together, I think they create a conducive environment for enterprises to invest in.
Okay.
Most of the companies which I have met here, they are absolutely, well, attracted by their first encounter. And for those who have already invested here, I have... none of them hearing complain and regret their investment. So,
okay.
So that is all. These are all things attractive for Malaysia.
So we need to get them to the door first, and then hopefully entice them
absolutely
to stay longer.
And there is some work for your embassy in in Brussels, but also in the other Europeans, that is make Malaysia known, because Malaysia, maybe not to the business community, but to the general public, is not so known as Vietnam is, or as Indonesia is, or as Thailand is.
All right. Yeah. In the 30 seconds or so that we have, Ambassador, you're fairly new to the country and to your post here.
Yes.
What are the items that you are pursuing while you're here, and something that we'll be talking about at our next encounter, perhaps?
What I'm pursuing is, first of all, three things.
It's in 20 seconds.
In 30 seconds. Okay, fine. On the academic level, I want to strengthen the links between the University of Ghent and the University of Terengganu. They are both strong in aquaculture. And the idea is to put up a regional master under ASEAN umbrella with EU financing, academic. On the economic level, I want to strengthen the collaboration between the Port of Lumut and the Port of Antwerp. They already have a collaboration agreement. I want to see that it can be put under the EU Global Gateway umbrella. And on the cultural level, I want to bring in some musicians from Belgium and also authors from Belgium to join the Georgetown Literature Festival coming up.
All right. We will cover all this in our next conversation. Ambassador, hopefully, thank you so much for speaking to me. Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to His Excellency Peter Van Ecker, Ambassador of Belgium to Malaysia. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile. 5G makes business sense.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.